Good afternoon. Welcome to Hometown Alaska. I'm Charles Wolforth, and today we're going to sit back and relax and talk with an old friend of mine, Perry Merkel, who I've known ever since he started up his first coffee shop on Fireweed Lane in a Quonset hut. And all these decades later, he's just retired from running Café Del Mundo, which produces great coffee and great places to sit down and meet your friends, and has a real place in Anchorage history. We never would have guessed way back when in the 80s that when Perry retired, it would be front page news in the newspaper, but it was, and a lot of people know Perry around the community. And so we're going to be visiting with him and learning about his life and his work as an entrepreneur, bringing gourmet coffee to Anchorage, things that have changed in Anchorage, how you can make a perfect cup of coffee. And then also, we're going to have a taste test right here in the studio. So it's going to be a fun hour. And your comments and questions and participation, memories or whatever, are more than welcome. The number to reach us here is 550-8433, outside Anchorage, 888-353-5752. We're on during the 2 o'clock hour, not at 7. So if you're calling at 7, you will reach an empty studio. And we also love getting our emails at hometownalaska@ksk.org. Well, welcome, Perry Merkel. You have always seemed like a pretty laid-back and relaxed guy, and more so now that you've retired and sold your business.
Oh, that is me, laid back completely.
Yeah. So what was your what prompted you to decide to sell your business, Café Del Mundo, to the competition?
Well, it wasn't an overnight, idea. I mean, I've been thinking about this truthfully for probably the last couple of years, and I don't want to say there was one thing in particular that, made me decide this was it, but it was soon after the beginning of the year that I really thought I'm ready. And I hate to use the term that I was burnt out, because I still love coffee. I'm something I will ever be passionate about. I mean, my God, this has been literally 36 plus years of my life, and you just can't say, well, although I may be through with the commercial aspect of it, I mean, coffee is something very near and dear to my heart. Mm-hmm. So it was after the first of the year that I got together with Tim Gravel from Kalati Brothers, and we started putting this together as far as the idea. And I guess it's safe to say it made sense to them, and, it made sense to me. And so it's been this transition. I mean, 4-plus months is a pretty quick time for this thing to happen, and I really think I had some great help behind me. Certainly, mm-hmm. I want to give credit and help thanks to my wife, and I had a great attorney as well. Mm-hmm. And also, the people from Kalati Brothers, they were just great to work with in really every sense of the way.
And they're planning to keep your brand, keep your stocks on the shelves, and run it as a separate business?
Yes, in the sense, I mean, I'm not going to... It's been known, I think a lot of people agree, there are different styles in roasting. The type of roaster that Kalati Brothers has been using for years and years. And by the way, that's when I first started. I had literally the same brand, same style of roasting. But it was in 82, 83 that I moved to the barrel roaster, a Probot, if you were using this literally the same coffee beans in both roasters, trying to take them to the same level, same degree of roast, if you will, there would be a subtle difference in, mm-hmm. in the taste. And it's just to say, it's hard to say, is one better? Because when we're talking about coffee, like wines, like a number of things, it's very subjective.
Some people will like one, some will like the other.
Yeah, I mean, some are going to like vanilla, some will like chocolate, regardless uh-huh. what you tell them, the attributes of this or that. But...
Well, what's the difference? I mean, are there sort of palate words or special words you would use to describe one or the other?
Well, again, there may be still a little biased, uh-huh. But I think with the barrel roaster, the Probat roaster, it brought out a deeper roast. And I don't, not to be misconstrued with a darker, I'm not saying anything, so please don't take that as burnt or dark. No, just deeper, fuller, richer tasting, if you will. And again, because Tim and I...
I'm not asking you to criticize your new
because I will say it's very subjective. I mean... But when it comes down to it, there's people are going to have their opinions as far as what they like. And, you know, this brand has been very good to them. You know, it's given them all the taste fulfillment that they were looking for, if you will.
So, well, is there some advantage in that each business almost has its own personality? You know, that the crowd that hangs out at your place there on Denali and Benson is maybe a different crowd that hangs out at their place at REI, and so you want to keep them all happy, you know,
well,
keeping their and continuity.
I suppose from if I can be so bold, I think that they were hoping to increase their market share because they're certain. I would agree, and I think Tim and the folks at Kaladi would agree that there are two different markets out there.
And what are they? Is there an older and a younger market? Or
well, I would like to say more mature,
okay.
But okay, maybe a few less piercings and tattoos and whatnot. But I say this tongue-in-cheek, but, you know,
It's true. It's true, yeah.
But any way you cut it, I have always been so proud of our customers that certainly the ones that I see first and foremost would have been those that have come into the Benson store or the retail store. I mean, like yourself, you know, it's hard to imagine, but yeah, when I had that little shop on Fireweed there, I mean, how simple life was back then. Little did anybody realize what would happen in the world of coffee.
Really? So tell me about, what year was it that you actually started as a businessman doing gourmet coffee? You weren't like the first. There were a few, like in San Francisco, I guess, there were a few small roasters or something.
It was not
anything like what it is now.
Well,
Most people here, I remember my folks making coffee in something called a percolator, which I don't think kids would even know what it was now, which is like a pot. You actually boil the water. It goes up a straw, and then it comes down through a thing, and you're actually boiling the coffee while you're making it.
Right, and by definition, I mean, there's many, many ways of making great cups of coffee. And they certainly do not need to be expensive in order to achieve, you know, to get a good cup of coffee. Unfortunately, the percolator was a poorly designed method of making coffee because it was by... boiling not only the water, because water per se, you know, it can be boiling like the Melitta method, okay, and pouring boiling water over those grounds.
Right.
But if it's a sustained boil, if the coffee continues to boil, that will kill it. I mean, it will just...
give you that horrible...
Yes, I don't care what kind
taste.
Of coffee it is, it's going to be... It will not be a good cup.
Well, so... But when you started here, there was nobody else doing... like fresh roasted coffee. Everybody was getting their coffee from a can or freeze dried. At some level, you had to teach people to want to go to a slightly more trouble to have good coffee.
When I came up here, it was December of 74. And I had these visions of getting a job on the pipeline and making a whole bunch of money and then getting the heck out of here and, you know, going back to Nirvana, back to California and continuing to groove down there, if you will. Well, I got a job at the Captain Cook Hotel, and it was 2.5 years, the best years of my life. And that's not to be taken. I mean, it was a great time and a great place to be. When I say the lobby of the Captain Cook, as I've said a number of times, if Anchorage was the air crossroads of the world, the lobby of the Captain Cook Hotel was the epicenter of that. I mean, there was so much going on there. I mean,
were you like a bellhop or?
Yeah.
And again, the Swedish stewardesses, you're carrying the bags up the elevator or something?
Charles, we're talking about coffee, remember?
Right, sorry.
Okay, so please, let's stick to coffee, right. Now, it was a great time and a great place to be, and I met so many great people there. To get back on track here, I mean, it was soon after that, I had already been... After that trip, I'm sorry, we were talking earlier before we got on air, and maybe...
Yeah, we'll get back to how you actually got into this, but I was interested in sort of the change in Anchorage and how you had to introduce gourmet coffee to Anchorage. People probably didn't even know what the heck it was.
Well, it's true. When I started up here, it was great. I'm very proud to have been the first coffee roaster in the state of Alaska. But by the same token, it was a learning curve because to a lot of people, you know, what are you talking about? Fresh roasted coffee. I can get my coffee just fine, thank you, you know, out of a can, you know, from Hills Brothers and Folgers and so on and so forth. So it was, while it's great to have been the first, it still doesn't mean that it was just easy pickings from there on out, because it wasn't. It was educating, you know, a good part of the market out there about what the merits of a quality, I've never really liked the word gourmet, but the coffee, you will find better grades.
Mm-hmm,
you can,
sure.
I mean, it's not all the same. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, and it's something where people at that time just thought, well, we've done it the same way all our lives. Why should we change, I would think? And now you're saying, well, if you pay a little bit more, you'll get something special. And I suppose when they had that first cup, maybe that was when you got your converts.
Right. Well, and over the years, I mean, depending how many years we want to go back, but people have taken, I think, more time and concern with their palate. I don't care if it's with wine or if it's cheeses or just the culinary scene in general, okay? If somebody were to take the time of, you know, just rather than guzzling a pot of coffee, and I say this tongue-in-cheek, uh-huh. But if they're taking the time to, you know, without getting too carried away, and I know this happens with, you know, with wine tastings,
yeah.
Oh, asparagus, green apples,
right.
This and that. I mean, it's true. There are times in coffee cuppings that you will hear some of these terms, not asparagus and green apples,
right.
But as far as when describing the richness in a cup of coffee, and hopefully we're going to have a chance to do this
yeah.
with some of these samples that I brought today.
Yeah, well, there's more of a connoisseur culture out there. Certainly in Anchorage. I mean, we had the Marx Brothers, which was sort of the first real fine dining restaurant about that same time. And then Carr's grocery stores kind of transformed the grocery world by adding, well, products like yours and then a lot of other things that nobody ever thought of in a grocery store before, right around that 70s, 80s time frame.
Well, if there was the big break, I mean, I will be very... I can't forget to thank Dale Gottstein out there, and hopefully she's Dale Goodwin now. Sorry. Greg Carr, certainly formerly mm-hmm. of Carr's here. I mean, they gave me a huge shot to go into Carr's Market back when it was a locally owned grocery, you know, supermarket
right.
chain. And it was, you know, that was the time, well, literally that's when I changed the roasters from what I had been using up to this Probot or the barrel type roaster, because at one point with the previous roaster, I think it was, we were literally roasting coffee 18, 19 hours in one given day, and something was going to break, either the human or the mechanical roaster, but something was going to give. So that's when I got this 90 kilo roaster, and you know, been using that ever since.
And so you had to quickly ramp up to sell in all these grocery stores and keep the product on the shelf and into more of a professional type of business.
It certainly changed as far as the volume went, absolutely. And going back, Carr's, I think, was very prudent in as much as that they didn't start. Well, first of all, the number of stores that they had were far different than the amount that are out there today. But regardless, they didn't put Cafe Del Mundo in all of the stores. It was just a couple of them, I think, the Aurora Village store and Sears Mall. And I guess I can say that it was an accepted product and we managed it well.
Mm-hmm. It's still there.
It's still there and we've grown with them. So yeah,
in the meantime, you've had Starbucks and of course Kaladi we already talked about, but all these big national outfits, international, that have exploded. And I guess there's this little sense of pride here in Anchorage that our little coffee guys are still making it against these huge conglomerates, you know, that And it's true in some other communities in Alaska too, like Raven Roast down in Southeast Alaska. Why were you able to hold on while other little small businesses can't fight against these huge conglomerates?
Well, I mean, partly, I mean, and I am very proud and appreciative of what the community here, because you're right. You know, Alaska is one of these places, you know, made in Alaska by Alaskans for Alaskans. I thought that was a little short-sighted, and I always thought, you know, my God, you know, we'll be happy to sell our coffee to anybody. But one of the things about the product, the market that, you know, I have been in, fresh roasted coffee, is that it's just that. And you can only, sure, you can package it, mm-hmm. you can grind it, you roast it, grind it, package it in so many ways, but it needs to come down as far as being fresh. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's really no way of cutting that. The best way of giving somebody, I don't care if it's produce from the, you know, Matsu or, you know, or salmon, the difference between having a salmon that was caught, yeah. you know, yesterday or this morning versus something sure. that was fresh frozen.
It's built-in local advantage. So do you ever think, if I'd started my business in Seattle, I would be the billionaire multinational, you know, conglomerate, or just like that, you don't even want that.
No, on that note, of course, that's that 2020 hindsight thing. Uh-huh. You know, I thought, my God, if I had just started and invested all the profits and bought Starbucks stock, of course, I could have been retired a long time ago. Yeah. But that didn't quite happen. And I've also thought of it, had I started in Seattle, then, you know, my God, what Starbucks has done to so many other small roasters is just gobbled them up, you
right.
know. Sometimes it's to their advantage.
So you had a little niche of safety here in Alaska.
And that's how I looked at it.
Mm-hmm.
And I will say that Kaladi Brothers over the years has been a great competition. I mean, we've had, I think, mutual respect for one another. And you know, I don't want to get into this love fest here.
Right.
I mean, sure, they were competition. I took them seriously, and I think they did as well. But as far as competition went, they were a great group to work with.
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
work against, however you want to say it in positive terms here.
Sure. Let's go to a call. We have Taylene. Did you have a question or a comment?
I have a quick comment. I know Perry probably won't remember, but I worked at a shop that he put his coffee in the very beginning at the pantry.
Pantry on D Street.
A wonderful woman named Jan owned the pantry.
Jan and Jane.
Perry
sure.
came in there with his coffee back in the day, and you'd only been here a few years at the time. And while we weren't really friends, I had enough of a friendly rapport with you that I've watched you over the years grow into the business that you are now. And I truly appreciate being able to see a hometown guy, even though this isn't your birthplace. You know, you've been here long enough, I think we can say that. But also, I appreciate your attitude about Kaladi Brothers. Thank you for bringing ethics into business. Both wonderful companies, Cafe Del Mundo and Kaladi Brothers. And I thank you for the things that you're doing in Central and South America, the homelessness. It's a lot of stuff. And so not only have you given us a lot of great coffee, Perry, you've been an inspiration to small businesses here, I think, and you're doing so much more for the community, and that's what businesses are all about. And I'll take your comments off the air. Thanks so much.
Thanks. What a nice call.
Well, thank you. And I do, you know, although I can't remember you in particular, but certainly it was Jan Pennington and Jane. But
it was like a housewares store.
Right. Yeah. And it was a great place. And certainly I was selling, my God, 10, 15 pounds of coffee every 2 weeks down there. That was one of my big accounts at first, sure.
Uh huh. Sure. Okay, folks, call in, have a word with Perry. Perry Merkel is my guest. Our coffee entrepreneur in Anchorage, and we're talking a little bit about Anchorage history as well, I guess. And we're going to have a taste test later, and we're interested in your comments or memories. The number here is 550-8433. That's in town. If you're calling from outside Anchorage, it's 888-353-5752. We take emails at hometownalaska@kska.org, and we're broadcasting in the 2 o'clock hour, so don't call at 7. If you're listening to the rebroadcast. Perry, we were talking a little bit before we got started about how you developed your interest in the first place, and you have a strong interest in Latin America. The last caller said something about the good stuff you're doing And I don't know what that is exactly.
Well, I'm not, possibly, I mean, the Coffee Kids money that we've raised for Coffee Kids primarily goes to needy kids in Central and South America and coffee-producing countries. You know, other than that...
So tell me, you know, you told a little bit about when you were a kid, you had the opportunity to live in Mexico for a while and I guess develop some language skills and travel and tell that story about how you actually got into coffee.
Okay. I mean, it was of this interest, this introduction, maybe I should say, to Mexico in the early 60s, having went for a 3-month plus trip with our family to San Miguel de Allende and other parts of Mexico, that I really got this interest in Mexico, which in college led me to put more time and attention into other Mexican or Latin American studies area. And I was, in the summertime, would go down to Mazatlan and these surfing trips down the west coast of Mexico and having a great time down there. But when I graduated from Sonoma State College with this great degree in cultural anthropology, which say I don't regret, but I wish I'd put a little bit more attention in business, possibly.
a few numbers would help, huh?
Yeah. But when I did graduate from college in spring of 73, I drove down through Mexico into Guatemala and El Salvador, and it was in Antigua, Guatemala that, I mean, it's so... happenstance, how, I mean, these little things that ultimately change your life. And I'm sure, I mean, if maybe you, this has happened with you, but there's this one defining day that I know what changed my life. And it was in Antigua, and I was, I wanted to bring back some good coffee back to California.
Because you'd had great coffee while you were down there?
I had had, truthfully, it's, not to get lost, but it's sometimes more difficult to get a good cup of coffee in these coffee-producing countries than it would be back.
Right.
But that's, I mean, that's simply the truth. Uh-huh. But I did want to bring back some good coffee back to California, and I was directed to this Beneficio just outside of Antigua, Guatemala, and... in the Beneficio, by the way, not to assume everybody knows what that is, that's where the growers would bring green coffee, their coffee cherries in to be processed, clean, processed, and then dried and bagged, ready for export. Well, they don't have really roasted coffee there at all, and I was quickly told by this gentleman that worked there that and certainly would I want to have roasted coffee, because by the time I got back to California, it would be stale and no good. And so I said, oh, of course, I'll take raw coffee. Not really have to say clueless. Uh-huh. That's probably the best word, clueless, yeah. What the heck I had in store for me. But I got about 15 pounds of green Guatemalan Antigua coffee. And when I got back to San Francisco area, I went to several small coffee roasters, Capricorn and Pete's and Berkeley and Grafeo's and Peerless and so on and so forth. This would have been, again, like it would have been spring of 73. And in one way or another, some a little bit more direct, they just simply said, no, we can't roast this, will not, you know, cannot roast it for you. And at one of these little places in San Francisco, I saw the stovetop coffee roaster. I mean, essentially a frying pan. Looks like somewhat of a heavy-duty popcorn popper. Uh-huh. And you just put the green coffee beans in there and just keep turning it around. And in approximately 40 minutes, you know, if you do it right and you keep turning, because you can't stop, because if it stops, it gets scorched and that throws it off. But
you're only going to do this if you're a real hobbyist.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it also produced this great, smoke and flavor throughout the apartment.
Oh, I bet, yeah.
But so from the spring, summer, fall of 73 into 74, I kept playing with this. And, you know, when I say playing with them, I mean, kept roasting it and trying a little bit.
Only one on your block?
Yeah, possibly two blocks, yeah. In Berkeley, I think they were roasting other things down there, yeah. But when I ran out of that coffee... I had essentially introduced myself to some coffee brokers in the old financial district of San Francisco down by Front and Pine, California, that area, but the old financial district. And coffee was relatively an inexpensive commodity. And sure, they would give me a few pounds of these samples or that, and I just kept playing with that as well. And so I continued with that until December of 74 when I decided to move to Alaska.
And then you already had this interest in this thing going.
Yeah.
Cool story. Mark, did you have a question or comment?
Yes, Charles. Thank you much for taking my call. I just wanted to thank Perry for all of his years of service, making and brewing and selling coffee in Alaska. I can nearly remember when I first went to Del Mundo, having just recently moved up here from Houston, Texas, where there was, as many of us transplants, Alaska, Anchorage in 82 was a different place than it is now. And Del Mundo was quite defined.
That was a place where you could meet the locals, for one thing.
Where you could meet the locals, and frankly, you could get a good cup of coffee that I'm not frankly sure where I drank coffee before I came to Perry's place. But it was that, along with a few other institutions such as KSK, made me think, gee, this is a real city after all.
Yeah, that's right. All right. Thanks for the comment.
Thank you, Mark.
Thanks much, Perry.
Now let's go to Juanita. Do you have a comment or a question?
Yes, actually, I have two comments. I used to ride the city bus, and there was a young man on the bus. You were talking before about kicking yourself for the investments you could have made. Well, this young man used to talk about loudly on the bus all the combinations of coffee that he would make, and you could mix it with this and that. And I'm thinking right now, if he's listening, he should be kicking himself because he could have been a part of this. And my other comment is, I'm 63 years old. I remember when I was younger, I used to go to have breakfast at a favorite restaurant because they made better coffee than I could make at home. And then all of a sudden, all the restaurants went to drip coffee. And I'm going, yuck, you know. And this restaurant lost my business because I don't like drip coffee. It's just bad. Well, I think it's bad. And I'm glad to see quality coffee now that you can get. And that's my story. Yeah. Thank you.
Okay, Juanita. You must feel kind of proud about what you've accomplished here, Perry. I mean, it's been a long run, but you've really successfully built something that's been part of the city and that people really obviously value quite a bit.
Well, first of all, thank you. And I would, Juanita, thanks for your comments. And again, Mark as well. There's one thing that I do have to, if I can be so bold, take issue with when Juanita says that, if I wrote it down correctly, that these restaurants could make better coffee than I could make at home. And when a lot of people look at making a good cup of coffee as, you know, it's some thing that just they can't reach on their own and they have to go buy it elsewhere. I mean, it's not true. I mean, you know, I say this and I did say this when I had my own store, and I'm certainly not saying it now that it's a big secret that I'm saying now after the fact that I'm out of the business per se, but it's so simple in making a good cup of coffee. I mean, but there are some basic things that you have to start with, and one of which is simply that good, fresh coffee, okay?
And let's make that a teaser, because I want to get into how to make the perfect cup of coffee and have our taste test in a little while when we come back. And I'm also going to give out the phone numbers again for if there are more callers who have questions about, okay, well, how do I do it? You know, how do I make a perfect cup of coffee? How do I improve my coffee setup? What are the differences? Do you really need to buy that good quality stuff? You know, or can you just buy the big bags at Costco or whatever? We've got it all. So we're going to talk more in the second half with Perry Merkel when we come back to Hometown Alaska.
If you missed part of today's program, or if you'd like to listen again to Hometown Alaska on KSKA, the program repeats tonight at 7 on FM 91.1. Remember, tonight's rebroadcast is recorded and will not be taking phone calls. A copy of Hometown Alaska will be available this afternoon on our website at kska.org. This is KSKA Anchorage.
Back on Hometown Alaska. I'm Charles Wolforth, and my guest today is Perry Merkel, the coffee man, the founder of Café Del Mundo, who is retiring. And we've been having a fun conversation today about how he started his business, how he got into coffee. And now we're going to talk a little bit about how to make the perfect cup of coffee and what the real differences are between different kinds of coffee. And he's brought four small thermoses here so we can have a taste test. And if you have any questions, it's your opportunity to find out what you could or anything you want to talk about. Maybe you just want to say hi.
Well, we can keep it sort of to coffee, okay? We'll try to
talk about coffee. We're not going to ask him about his opinion on world peace. Number here is 550-8433, and that's in town. If you're out of town, 888-353-5752. And email is a great way to reach us at Hometown Alaska at KSKA.org. All right. So the question number one is there a one best way to make coffee?
And that's absolutely no. Yeah. I mean, there are some rules that you need to do in order to achieve to get a good cup of coffee. But to some people, I mean, you know, for Italians, a coffee, the way by definition coffee is espresso, espresso coffee. That's how they make it. Okay. But, and again, I don't want to be completely wishy-washy and saying there's no one way and it's very subjective, but these are things that we need to factor in because if I like black coffee, and certainly if you take your coffee with cream and sugar, you know, is that wrong? No, it's a difference. But still, there's the fundamental part
The things you want to avoid doing wrong, at least. We talked about boiling the coffee, for example.
Right. And certainly the coffee needs to be ground appropriately for the method that you're making. If you're using a French press, I would say generally it's recommended that you use a coarsely ground coffee.
Otherwise, it gets all into the coffee.
You're going to get that much more sediment in the cup. And adversely, if you're using an espresso, be it stovetop or a espresso machine, you would want to have it finely ground, not pulverized, but finely ground. Because there is this rule as far as to extract the right shot of amount of espresso, be it roughly 2.5 fluid ounces, 2.5, maybe 3 ounces of espresso, it should take a minimum of 18 seconds to a maximum of 28 seconds. And if it took 10 seconds to get that shot of espresso, then that water is going through your espresso too quickly, and certainly it's not going to extract the flavor that's in there. Adversely, if it took 40 seconds to go through the coffee grounds and the espresso, the portafilter, the handle, then it would over-extract, and it's going to bring out so much bitterness. I mean, so there are, I'm not saying it has to be done only one way, but there's a little window there. But there are some things, rules, why we want to grind it or prepare it one way or the other.
And if you, in terms of like grinding, I mean, most people are probably putting their coffee through some kind of a paper filter, in a coffee machine or a funnel. And what are the key things there, making sure you don't grind it too fine?
Well, generally, you do want a finer grind for that. I mean, to use the term a Melita or drip, I mean, you want it, and even sand, sometimes sand is, well, there's coarser sands than other, but you want it fairly fine so when you pinch it together, it would still adhere, okay? Now, one of the key things, and this is something if nothing else that I really want to get across, is one of the necessities in making a good cup of coffee. We've already talked about it's got to be good, fresh coffee to start with. It's got to be ground properly for the apparatus that we're using, French press or Melita style or what have you, or espresso. But you need to use the right amount of coffee. And assuming that a lot of people make drip coffee at home, and I think that's a great way of making coffee, you know, Krups or, no, I don't think anybody uses Chemex anymore, but a Melita type drip way, Mr. Coffee, that you want to use the right amount of coffee. And if there's one thing as a coffee drinker that I abhor, and that is weak coffee, okay? Because you can always, and I'm not saying that everybody out there should drink coffee like me. No, I'm not saying that at all. But please remember that you can always add hot water to, if the coffee is too strong, you can always dilute it. But if it's too weak to start with, you know, it's gone, you know?
And it's a matter of taste to some extent, but I'm sure there's some, if you're trying to stretch your coffee, you probably are going to end up with something like that.
Right. And what I do suggest is at least, and by the way, so I get this out of the way, what is the correct amount of coffee? The Specialty Coffee Association recommends 2 level tablespoons of ground coffee per 6-ounce cup. Okay.
All right.
And it's sometimes, you know, maybe a little bit of pain in the backside to, you know, get that. Okay, what was it again? 2 level tablespoons of ground coffee per 6-ounce cup of water, okay? Now, that may be a little, take a little time. After a while, you're, and what
you're gonna eyeball it once you're used to it.
Yeah, and the thing is, because I'm not saying that this is how you must drink it, but what I would suggest is that at least you try this, okay? Try, you know, go through the extra time and hassle and try it this way, and then sure, you know, I respect, you know, your choice. Right. I mean, if, hey, pal, I don't care what you say. It's too strong for me. Fine. Right, cut it back to whatever you like.
So if folks are interested in learning more about the organization Perry just mentioned, the Specialty Coffee Association of America is linked on our website at KSKA.org, along with Café Del Mundo and a few other links. Now, I've noticed that when you go to a coffee shop, there are dramatic differences in how coffee's made. And I personally like your coffee, and I like Kaladi's Brothers, but I don't go for Starbucks at all. It has a very sort of aggressive flavor. What's the difference there?
Aggressive? I haven't quite heard that term before.
Sharp, heavy,
oh,
bitter.
I like these are great terms. Yes. Yeah. Can't continue. Yeah. I mean, Charles, really.
Is it just the style that they've chosen and how to make it?
I mean, I think we all have to. And I, for one, acknowledge what Starbucks has done. I mean, it's amazing, you know.
It's incredible.
It's incredible what they have done. Now, of course, that was under, you know, Howard Schultz leadership that they've really took this into the stratosphere. But I think Starbucks has done a phenomenal job when it comes to the quality of green coffee. And I'm not contradicting what I've said previously. I do think that their general style of roasting is darker than what I have done. I mean,
I see.
And the roasting, the degree of roast is really
so critical. That's the difference between your different coffee makers that you would, or you know, when we talk about roasters, they each have a style, and the coffee is going to be to your taste.
Well, to some degree, because again, Kaladi Brothers, Café Del Mundo, Starbucks or whomever, I mean, we could all have what we might consider our signature roast. Now, that's not going to, I'm not going to contradict and say, you know, the types of coffee, there's some coffees that you may want to roast darker than others, but certainly the coffees that you could have a Colombian. In fact, what we, if I can give a trade secret per se, our French roast was 100% Colombian coffee. And it's always, it was a great, you know, it was a great example to use. Okay, this is what I'm talking about when I'm talking about the degree of roast. To take a Colombian or regular Colombian Supremo and then also have you know, this 100% Colombian that was taken to a French roast. Okay, and try these. You don't have to be a coffee, I say tongue-in-cheek, connoisseur. You can, if you were just a layperson and drank coffee occasionally, if you had both of these coffees, it's night and day difference.
Yeah.
And it's these are all assuming that we're preparing it the same way, the same, you know, amount of coffee, water, ground the same way, mm-hmm. so on and so forth. It would be night and day difference.
Let's go to Chris in Chugiak, who has a comment. Chris?
Hey, Perry Merkel, this is a voice from the past. Chris Hughes, I sold you some cell phones back in the early 90s.
Yeah, I've been meaning to get back to you about those damn cell phones. I remember double espresso, right?
You bet. I'll tell you, you turned me into a coffee snob because while I was there trying to sell you cell phones, you were kind enough to take me through the entire roasting process and your plant. And I thoroughly enjoyed and learned so much about it, and you're under no obligation to it at all. And it showed your passion, and, you know, you sound today over the radio the same way you did when I was sitting in your offices there. I guess I'm just trying to say thank you so much, Perry, for what you've done, and I do miss seeing you, and hopefully I can catch up with you sometime. But your coffee it absolutely taught me what I needed to know so I can make a decent cup of coffee, even if I can't get to Del Mundo.
Excellent.
Chris, I certainly do remember you, and I almost remember that afternoon. It probably says something about my very heavy schedule that I had then. But yes, I do remember that. Thank you.
Great call, Chris, and it just reflects what all of us are saying, I think, is that thank you, Perry, for your contributions to this community. It has been very significant over the years. I don't want to miss out on getting my coffee. I came in here saying I was feeling a little groggy, and I've got 4 thermoses of coffee sitting in front of me. I want to have our taste test.
You're going to need to sign this this release first. You know, if you can't hold me responsible if you get wired tonight.
I won't. I'm not sleeping. All right.
Right.
Okay, you're off the hook.
Okay, certainly we can have some of these.
Sure, let's have some. What have we got? Coffees from different countries?
Well, we've got different countries, and we also have a dark roast. Now, we've got a Colombian Supremo, we've got a Kenya AA, a Sumatra Mandailing, and then we have the Seattle style, which is a dark roast. It's a blend of Central American coffees.
All right.
So I might suggest that we start with the lighter one, either the Colombian Kenyan, one of those first, and then go into the Sumatra.
You be my guide, and I'll describe what Perry's doing since he had to get away from the microphone in order to pour the coffee. He's got some of those cups with the beans, which has been a logo almost from the beginning, I think. And he's got these little metal thermoses and pouring just a little, just like in a wine tasting. You know, we don't have to spit this out on the floor or anything, do we?
No.
Yeah. All right. So which one are we trying first?
This is a Colombian Supremo, and I want to thank, it sounds awkward to say Cafe Del Mundo, but this was made at the Cafe Del Mundo store on Benson, mm-hmm. now owned by Colati right. Brothers, but thank you very much, Tim. And again, before we just get too judgmental about this, I mean, this Colombian, I love Colombian coffee. When I think of richness and just not too sharp, I mean, it's a full, very satisfying cup. And one of the things I'd like to dispel, if I could, when people say, I love coffee from such and such, or sometimes you hear, I don't like coffee from this country, you know, to me, they're not that familiar with it because if somebody said, I don't like Mexican coffee, and I've heard him say this, I mean, I try to, without getting too uppity about this, there are so many distinct coffee growing regions within Mexico, from Oaxaca and Chiapas, Colima, Veracruz, and all of them are distinct.
I mean, climate and the soil and all that.
Elevation, rainfall, temperature, all in, of course, you know, don't want to sound chauvinist, man's aspect, you know, interaction with the coffee.
How it's harvested.
But if for these same people that may be drinking wine, if there's any wine and coffee drinkers out there by chance, you know, certainly it's easy enough to look at a Napa Sonoma.
You would say, I don't like California wine.
Well,
right.
Of course not. I mean, how silly does that sound?
Yeah.
Or, you know, even... you know, California Reds. I mean, and you wouldn't even say it, I don't think you would say it about, I don't like Napa County Chardonnays or, you know, Cabernets or something, because they're so distinctive from one vineyard to another. And this is certainly true with coffee. It's depending, I mean, if, when you're going into your coffee shop, wherever you're buying your coffee beans, just like it might be on a bottle of wine, sometimes if you look close enough, if you have a good rapport with your roaster, ask to see, okay, is this an estate coffee? If it truly is an estate coffee, that means that this coffee comes from it. What it should mean, unless it's being misused, it's coming from a particular estate. As opposed to, you know, I mean, sometimes, and it's not that it necessarily means it's bad, but if it's a Colombian coffee or, you know, a Costa Rican Terrazu, but it's just a mixture. It's not any particular one locale.
Well, let's try another one. We're getting a lot of calls and messages here. I want to get to as many as we can. That was delicious. I would say that was not, that was fairly mild.
Yeah. Colombian is still considered a mild. And while you're taking the call, I'm going to
I'll read you a couple of emails while we pour another cup here. This emailer says, stopping by Café Domino for my morning coffee has yielded some amazing benefits. I have a coffee buddy that is a fellow crafter, another with whom I share and receive great reading suggestions. I run into other acquaintances and friends on a regular basis. Sometimes this is the only place I see them regularly. Perry provided the venue and have appreciated the establishment. It is a real community place. That's where people get together.
You know, and I thank whoever that...
It's Ann Brooks.
Well,
I'm
of
sure
course,
you know
Ann. I know Ann. You know, somebody said, you know, they posted something on, I forget if it was an email. I think it was an email. But they were saying, and hopefully this people take this in the right way, that Café Del Mundo was like an original, I think the word they used was an organic Facebook. In the sense that without all the social media hype, I mean, this people met there. And, you know, sometimes literally met there or got in discussions. I mean, what coffee shops are...
It must be a fun place to work,
Oh, absolutely.
So what are we tasting now?
This is a Kenya AA.
Oh, I like that.
Now, if one could generalize, which I probably should, although they shouldn't generalize, sometimes a little more flowery. It's a more, a little more bouquet. It's a little lighter.
More complex, more to it,
I think.
Yeah. So let's go to a call from John in Anchorage. John? You still with us, John?
Go ahead. I'm here. Hi, Perry. This is kind of a nuts and bolts question. Back in the early mid-80s, I bought a device from you to make coffee. It was a cold process system where you took a...
Yeah, I know. The Toddy coffee maker.
Yeah, you just dumped a pound of coffee in and filled it with cold water and let it sit for 24 hours. And then you take a little small quantities of it and throw it in boiling water, and you had instant coffee. And I'm just curious what the it was really smooth, and I'm just curious what the I don't see those anymore, and what the deal on it is.
In the Toddy coffee maker, and there was another brand that did the same thing. You know, and I, to be completely honest, when I first started back on Fireweed Lane, I did use this method of making coffee, and it was easy. Now, if I have to publicly say, you know, in retrospect, this was not, I don't think this was the best way of making coffee. Now, it's true, it made an incredibly smooth cup of coffee, and it did reduce some of the acidity to coffee. But as the terms that I've used over the years, it sort of lobotomized the coffee. It took off some of the highs and lows out of these coffee, and it rounded it off more. I don't know if this is making sense to you, but it's true. Some of the advantages you know, that you could make a very, it was quick, it was easy. By definition, it was instant coffee, just water soluble, add this concentrate in hot water, and you had an easy cup of coffee. But I think over the years, if I can be so bold, as my taste developed a little bit more, you know, some of these, when I say sharper edges, or just some of these little bit more, the aspects of coffee that are not quite as rounded. I don't know if this makes sense
to
you, but I appreciate
it. Sounds like you still like it, huh, John?
Oh, I like it. And also you could fill up a little vial and take it if you went away for the weekend.
There you go.
Yeah, right.
All right. Well, thanks for your call. Let's try another one. I can use the same paper cup again, so we don't waste. I always like how you can bring your coffee cup into Del Mundo and get it warmed up and used so that you don't waste so many paper cups. So Perry Merkel, my guest, is pouring another cup for our taste test here, and I'll read an email. I'm not a coffee drinker, but I'm well aware of all the great things Perry has done for this community. All the best with your retirement, and thank you, from Claire. So you've got a lot of well-wishers out there, and it's fun to be part of your radio retirement farewell party here. You're not going anywhere, though, are you?
Not that I know of.
Okay,
no.
Well. And you're always a big, you're always here at Fun Drive time, so we appreciate that.
I was just here
well.
A few weeks ago. It's nice to be in a different studio, and no disrespect to Beatty, but it's nice to be talking to somebody else here. And I didn't have to get up at 4:30 to get here. You
right.
Know?
So now we're drinking what?
This is a Sumatra Mandailing, and this one, this should be much bolder, fuller, more robust, fuller-bodied on the palate. Mm-hmm. I mean, not the other ones were thin, but this should definitely stay on your tongue a bit longer.
And an interesting other flavor there. Sort
this
of almost
is very
tanginess.
The Sumatran is very distinctive. Yeah.
And have you ever analyzed what causes the differences? I mean, I know you said water and climate and handling, but I mean, it's so probably so many things you couldn't put your finger on any one.
It's some of the, now we're starting to push a little bit, but I mean, from the angle, as we mentioned, okay, the altitude is one of the biggest, you know, changes what will influence the coffee. Certainly the soil, the temperature, humidity, all of these things, the cloud cover. I mean, some areas they can take for granted that it's going to be sunny, whereas some places are going to have more cloud cover. With that, it's, you know, when the coffee is processed and how it's, to what degree it's dried.
But you're buying only the very, very best. I mean,
every coffee roaster says that, Charles, of course.
But I mean, you're not going to go to all this trouble and buy the run-of-the-mill.
You're absolutely right. I mean, in all truthfulness, I'm not being sarcastic here. If one, and we did have at the warehouse, I got samples of, I remember for a presentation I was making to a group, and I wanted to have a poor quality coffee. So, what makes a good coffee? Well, you need consistency. As a coffee roaster, any decent roaster would want to see a consistency in size, shape, and color of these green coffee beans. And sometimes they vary green, bluish, and whatnot. But the point is that the uniformity in size, shape, and color. Because if they're the more uniform they are, the more that they will roast evenly. And and that makes sense. So years ago, I was going to be doing a presentation for either a community school group or something. And I remember this a coffee importer in the Bay Area that, let's just say, can go nameless. I called down there and they told him what I was going to do. And I said, I'd really like a sample of some bad coffee. Can you help me out? And they did send me up this Ecuadorian Robusta triage. And you wouldn't have to know anything about coffee to say, this doesn't look particularly good. I mean, there's what they call black beans in there, the size, it was a rainbow, and there was stems, and it was just bad. It was just bad. And I assure you, they don't bring that into the United States just for, you know, for curious coffee roasters. No, because there's a market, unfortunately,
for
cheap coffee, call it what it is, and it's going to be used in soluble coffee, you know, instant coffee or, you know, wherever, but it would not go on any, you know, to use the term specialty coffee right. roaster. They would never have. Today we've got a special on Ecuadorian Robusta Triage. No. Yeah.
Okay. Hey, I have a call now from Barbara in Anchorage. Barbara?
Hi there. How are you doing today?
Great. Thanks for being with us.
Hey, Charles, you're going to be hopefully up not all night drinking all that caffeine.
I'm just having a few tastes.
Well, I just have a comment. I just wanted to acknowledge how exciting shopping trips to Carr's Grocery Store, store in Aurora Village became once I started, once I discovered the Cafe Del Mundo's beans that you could freshly grind there. I had just been ordered by my doctor to get off of caffeine, and I was browsing through the coffee section looking for some, you know, decaf Folgers or something horrible like that, and that was the first time I ever saw the beans in the store that you could actually grind yourself. And holy cow, the aroma knocked my socks off and actually caused rather a spectacle in the store, because there were several people that kind of gathered around. What's going on? Where's that smell coming from?
Oh, yeah.
I'll have what she's having, yes.
I remember the exactly.
I was actually grinding up some Irish cream after sticking my nose in several different varieties of flavors that you had there. It was quite an experience, and I always looked forward to grinding my own beans right there in the store. So
I kind of have the same memory of buying coffee from Perry when he's on Fireweed, having it ground, and then you walk around with this amazing perfume following you, and everyone wants to know where it came from. I think that was your biggest selling point. I've got another email I want to read, and we have maybe just time for one more taste test here because we're running out of time. So why don't you pour the next one while I read this email? This is from Dale. Not that many years ago, while innocently grocery shopping, I found the owner of Café Del Mundo, you, resupplying his own sales kiosk. Owner-operated small business is the only way to do it. Finally, commuting northbound on the new Seward, it took me a long time to figure out the source of a certain delicious fragrance occasionally wafting over the freeway in the mornings. I simply took the time one day, using my nose, to trace the source over to your roaster on International and Nose Alt Seward. That's fun. You know, you create a lot of memories here over the years.
Yeah, there's a couple of comments I would like to make. First of all, to the lady that called in, I think it was Barbara a caller ago, mm-hmm. when she said her doctor told her to get off caffeine. I admit, I am not a doctor. I've never gone to medical school, but when I hear people say this, that their doctor told them not to drink coffee, I always say, get a second opinion. You know,
right.
Really. You know, don't blame coffee on all your ills.
Right.
You know, but decaf is not a bad option.
We'll have to have you on line one sometime soon.
Now,
so what have we got now? What
okay,
is this,
this is the dark roast. This is the Seattle style. It's Central American coffees, a couple of them that are roasted together up to a dark roast. Mm-hmm. And hopefully this is also going to be very distinctive, in as much as it's going to be the darker roast is going to bring out a sharper nuance.
Yeah, I like it.
Now, the other thing as far as...
I've liked all of them, but this one, yeah, what you say is very true.
When the lady was saying that, she saw that, you know, followed her nose and whatnot, there were times that, you know, when we were roasting there that a lot of people thought, my God, that place is on fire over there.
Well, this has been great fun. I've had Perry Merkel with me for the last hour. Seems like it was a lot less than that, didn't it?
Yeah, Charles, it really has been a lot of fun, and I want to thank you and the group out there listening.
My pleasure, and I will be back again next week hosting Hometown Alaska, and I hope you'll be with us. Kristen Spack has been our engineer in the booth today and done a great job as usual, and Pat Yak is the director of news and public affairs here and keeps us all on the straight and narrow. Thanks for listening. This has been Hometown Alaska, and I'll be with you again next week.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Telecommunications Incorporated, which is solely responsible for its content. Theme music for Hometown Alaska is Lead Dog, composed and performed by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Views expressed on Hometown Alaska are those of the participants and do not reflect KSKA or its underwriters. Today's program is available on our website at kska.org, and CD copies can be purchased by calling 550-8400. This is KSKA Anchorage.